Now, the research shows, are millionaires happier than people that aren't? They actually are. They're happy. But of course, society tells you what? They're not happy. They've stepped on people to get there. Trust fund baby, they're probably over leveraged. Isn't that true? What else do we say? Okay, you can lose it and gain it. And that's an interesting thing. In fact, a lot of people, how many of you have trained with Harv Eker? Harv's a great guy, and he works on that mindset. And in fact, he says, if anybody ever comes up to you and says money's not important, what should you say? You don't have any, do you? Because we pursue wealth because we can change the world. We pursue wealth for three reasons. It makes us better people, doesn't it? It gives us freedom to be with our family, do what we want, and of course to give back, to be enlightened. That's why we pursue wealth. The best thing you do to help a poor person is not be poor yourself. So it's okay, we have to change our mindset. Society's taught us a scarcity mentality. An important thing to understand, if you're thinking about what's taken so long, what is the biggest obstacle? You talk to Robert Allen, Harv Eker, or any millionaire, what is the biggest obstacle in creating a millionaire? Mindset. As I train persuaders and even salespeople, they believe they're $150,000 a year people. October, they've made $150,000, what happened? Well, the money stops, but they are what? They keep working. They don't know what's wrong. But they mentally sabotage themselves, don't they? They've reached their limit in their mind, and so they think they're going to make more, but they sabotage themselves. That's what takes so long. And I was like many of you sitting in the back of these seminars, listening to these millionaires talk about success and vision and mindset and goal setting. And I'd sit back there and say, yeah, whatever. Give me the tool. And then one day it hit me, what? Those are the tools. Those are the most important tools that make the big difference. I had a company call me up that wanted to train some new persuaders. It's very expensive for companies to train people. And he hired 10 of them, and he wanted at least 5 to stick. And he wanted to know how he could know which ones were the best to keep. I go, it's very simple. Let me come over. So I came over, and I did a training for them on goal setting. Okay. Now, most people roll their eyes on that. Isn't that true? Oh, goal setting, I've heard that before. It was really nauseating. It was just basic, very, very basic. And I said, when you leave, you watch what happens. Your top producers will say what? That's good. That was a good review. Yeah, I need to work on that. Thanks for reminding me about that. The low producers, the ones that aren't going to stick around, are going to say what? Oh, I've tried that before. I've heard that before. Give me something else. And then there was a stark line right down the middle. Because top producers always like a great review. That's what's important as we talk about these principles of wealth. In fact, one last thing about wealth I want to talk about. When you see someone, other people, when they see someone in a very expensive car or living in a very expensive home, what negative and derogatory things do they say about them without ever meeting that person? Inherited, drug dealer, trust fund baby, snobby, over-leveraged, not happy. Oh, you guys are good at this. Keep going. Short-handed. What's that? Got it by divorce. But here's the lesson. You cannot become what you resent. You cannot become what you despise. You cannot become what you make fun of. Isn't that true? So if there's a member of your family, someone you don't like that's wealthy, but I mean, what should you say? Good for them. I'm next, right? You can say you're next, but good for them. Until that happens, you're feeding your mind that it's not okay. Society has poisoned your mind. We have to reprogram your mind when we talk about wealth. When we talk about business success. Now, what I want to do is increase your pain a little bit, and we're going to divide up into groups. What we're going to do is what we call a first impression exercise. You are going to be able to rate your fellow neighbor on what you think of them when you first meet them. Come on, smile for me. Do you want to know? You do want to know, and we're going to get to that information and show you exactly how to do that. So what I want to do is bring up Steve. Oh, John's going to do it. You got the overhead? Bring up John. Everybody give John a hand here. We're going to bring up John later. He has bought and sold over, was it 3 homes? 600 homes. Commercial real estate. And later, during the 3 days, we'll probably have a stump John. Anybody want to pick his brain a little bit on how to apply his principle? It comes back to persuasion. Very good. And everyone here has a different specialty, whether it be internet or network marketing. And they're here so you can pick their brains. And we'll turn this exercise over to John. All right, thank you. Thanks, John. Now, what were we really doing there? What was that really about? Why would we force you to do that? Well, there's a couple reasons. First of all, we need to teach you to start reading people. Second of all, I want you to get to know each other so you can do business with each other. And then, of course, we want people to evaluate you. Back in the back, one of the real things we do, we were looking at your first, we were going to give you your scores. The sheet they're filling out, we're going to average the scores as far as really figuring out how people feel about you. And when you talk to our analysis, they're going to tell you, well, this is how you work on it, this is how you change it. It's who you are, but we need to change some things. But the real thing you didn't know was going on is that we were evaluating you on your nonverbals. I can't tell you that ahead of time. And your vocal fillers. What are vocal fillers? Or some of them, you just... And we were kind of taught that way. We use vocal fillers. If you use a few here and there, it's not a big deal. But if you use too many, it does decrease your credibility. So we wrote down all your nonverbals that detracted from your message, that took away from your credibility. You will also get the scores as far as what the audience felt about you. And then that stuff, that's the type of information we're compiling. Later we'll be doing a trust exercise. We're not going to throw you off a cliff, but we're going to, you know, the trust exercises where you fall back. We're not doing that, but people are going to evaluate you on the different areas of trust. So you know what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are. Although we're mature enough to realize we have different strengths and different weaknesses, and that's okay. Let's improve it and let's move on as we talk about the world of persuasion and learning how to persuade in the right way. And in my mind, it's like the parable of the son, it's the fable of the sun and the wind. Bitter enemies, they hated each other, didn't like each other. And they said, let's have a contest. Let's see who's the most powerful element in the universe. And so the sun said to the wind, okay, pick a contest. He said, you see the man down there holding that jacket? First person to get that man to take his jacket off is the most powerful element in the universe. So what did the wind do? All the clouds and blew on the old man's jacket, tried to blow the old man's jacket off. And the more he blew, the old man did what? Held on tighter and tighter and tighter and knocked the man down, but he still held on to his jacket. That's the old style of persuasion. The sun just smiled, turned up the heat, burned off the clouds, beads of perspiration developed on the old man's forehead, and strike the jacket. Others to want to do what you want them to do and like doing it. That's the key to persuasion and influence and whatever it is. And persuasion sometimes in sales has gotten a bad rap because people have blown it before. Yeah, I remember getting a call from the university. They called me in to teach another class. And I said, well, what's the class on? He says, it's rhetorical methods. Like, rhetorical methods? What's that? So I was looking at the rhetorical questions. I was looking like, oh, it's a sales class. He's like, no. No. Rhetorical methods. Go ahead. Question? Okay. Would admit that. And that's the biggest complaint when you look at the large universities is they're not teaching these basic skills. In fact, Harvard's finally adding sales classes to their MBAs because it's such a critical skill that they just haven't learned how to do that. It's true. It depends. But on average, they are happier than most people. And I think most millionaires are very enlightened, but the media tends to focus. So we ask people, well, name a bad millionaire. Who do they name? Donald Trump and maybe the person at Enron. But as you go through these seminars and meet millionaires, would you agree most of them are pretty good people? But that is a good point. I agree. There are some that, and you have to understand, money makes you more of what you already are. If you're miserable and mean, it's just going to make it worse. There are a few that are like that. Okay, back into persuasion. We looked at your nonverbals, we looked at your vocal fillers, we graded you on your trust, some things to help you out there. And understand, too, it's interesting as you look at real estate or network marketing. Have you ever seen anybody get into real estate and they go out for a couple months and then they say, oh, it doesn't work? Or network marketers, they try it for 2 or 3 months, oh, it doesn't work. You've seen that, haven't you? And we have to say, whoa, 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 no, it didn't work for you. We know it works. Aren't there millions of millionaires created through real estate? Millionaires in network marketing. So it's not the business, but people tend to blame what? Network marketers, 2 or 3 months, they quit, who do they blame? The business or the economy or this. It's not that. It's you. It's the skills. We have to kind of open ourselves up to that. So let's talk about business success. Let's not sugarcoat it here. Is this a great country to start a business? Okay. Studies show, and here's your motivation part for the day, that after 5 years, those that have started a business in this country, 96% fail. Is that motivating? In one of the greatest countries in the world to start a business, the answer is why? Wow. So Dun & Bradstreet and the Small Business Administration separately and independently spent millions of dollars to try to figure it out. Why are so many businesses failing? What's going on? What's happening? And independently came to the same conclusion, all businesses fail because of a lack of sales. Duh. Doesn't sales pretty much fix everything? Granted, we're assuming you have a good product. Doesn't sales fix everything? It sure helps, doesn't it? And so that's the big thing, is the sales. And so as we monitor businesses, what are the critical skills that make the biggest difference? What are the skills that will make a huge difference? So if you're not making as much money as you want, if your business is not as successful as you want, you have to take a look at these things. That comes back to the 85-15. This is what we're finding out. This is what the study shows. Is that your success, your core competence, your real estate knowledge is 15% of your success. And if you notice the page number at the bottom correlates with your book, a lot of these things are in there, some of the things you don't need to write down. So if you graduate from law school and you're a lawyer, does that guarantee your success? Does your real estate knowledge guarantee your success? A doctor. So your core competence is 15% of your success. That is your knowledge about real estate or whatever your business is. The other 85% is what we're going to focus on here. We have people like John and others that have the core competence. If you have real estate questions, how to apply these things you're running into, we have people that you could talk to here. But we want to talk about the 85% that will make the biggest difference in your business. And I want to talk about what we call the success blueprint. There are four areas of your business that are critical. If you're not making the money that you want, need, or deserve it, I guarantee you it's one of these four areas, and let's fill them in. The first one is personal mastery. Have you ever had a day when you didn't feel like doing the things you know you needed to do? Honest with me, every day. This morning, when that alarm clock went off, when you stayed out too late last night, your guilty faces. This is what I call self-persuasion. If you can't persuade yourself, can you persuade other people? No. So we're going to learn more about yourself and human nature. If you can't get yourself to make the phone calls, the prospect, to knock on doors, you're not going to be doing very well in your business. So that's the first one. The second one is persuasion. This would be sales mastery, understanding human psychology, learning the skills of persuasion. See, most people in business, they worry on the wrong thing, about the wrong thing. If I wanted to start a jet charter company, and I was all excited to start this business, and I got the jet, we got the investors, and the first phone call came in, I got the red carpet, and the drinks, and the alcohol, everything that I needed, and then I say to myself, oh, I don't have anybody to fly this thing. How hard can it be? I'll figure it out on my own. And what's going to happen? You get the manual out, you're sitting there, I can drive a car, I can do this jet plane, and what's going to happen? You're crashed. That's what most people do in their business. They, oh, we got to get the computer and the fax machine and everything else. Well, those are great, but those aren't the most important things. We're focusing on the wrong thing. The next one we're also going to be focused on this morning is influence. Now, influence is a higher form of persuasion. That's your trust, that's your passion, that's charisma, optimism falls in that category, the leadership skills. Is there anybody in your life right now that would ask you for $1,000, you'd give it to them, no questions asked? You, me? No, I'm just kidding. I was going to ask for the $1,000. But that's influence. They don't need any figures. They would ask you because they developed that influence, that trust. That's what I want to focus on. And the third one are your presentation skills. Why aren't people calling you back on the phone? One-on-one, in a group. Many of you will find yourself speaking in front of a city council trying to... Has anybody done that yet? Spoken at city council? Four of you? It will happen. You need to learn these skills. What we call verbal packaging. Do you really think one word could repel somebody from you? Is it true to say that every word you use is either going to attract or repel the person? What we're going to talk about this morning is verbal packaging, words you should and should not be using in the real estate world and the business world. So that's what we call a success blueprint. This is what I want to focus on is these areas. So let's hit the self-persuasion, the personal mastery. People around you. It's interesting as we talk about these things, the people around us. Isn't it interesting you tell your family and friends about your goals, your dreams, your aspirations? What do they say? What happened? The people closest to you. You're insane. Freaking insane. Risky. Why is it the people closest to you tend to spit on your dream? Why don't they want you to succeed? They love you, don't they? It tells them, there you go, it tells them the truth about themselves. When they see that spark in your eye, when they see you going after things that you've always wanted, consciously or subconsciously, they're going to pull you down. That's why many people say, oh, you're going to another seminar. Have you seen, has that happened, right? Oh, another seminar. Oh, how's your real estate billions coming? Are you a millionaire yet? You know those little jabs that you get? Sometimes they're trying to protect you. That's true. They're judging you on your past, not your future, though. That's the challenge there. All right? And I told my family, I'm going to write a book. It'll be a bestseller. And it takes a while to write a book. And I have those jabs at the reunion. Oh, how's the book coming? Bestseller. How'd you know? If people do that, it's really interesting. We have to understand how that affects us and our mindset. So let's talk about this. I'm looking for a mentor who'll show me how to get rich without boring me with a lot of advice. Okay? That's what a lot of people want, and that's not how it works. So let's talk about these things. Let's talk about mindset, just real briefly, and then let's talk about fear, some real obstacles in self-persuasion. As we study millionaire and millionaire psychology, it comes back to mindset. And that's why I've said time and time again, if you've ever listened to any of my phone calls, that the universe will not reward you physically until you believe it mentally. The universe will not reward you physically until you believe it mentally. Why is it that 95% of all lottery winners who win over $1 million go bankrupt within 5 years? It's not congruent with what their beliefs are. They're not a millionaire in their mind. That's why you sabotage yourself. That's one of the reasons it's taking so long. That's one of the most important things. It's one of the things that people want to hear last. Well, give me the tools. No, these are the tools. It's the mindset. And millionaires, they follow their hearts, don't they? How many times, you remember Mark Victor Hansen, Jack Canfield, good friend? How many times was Chicken Soup for the Soul? How many times did publishers say, no, we don't like it? 40, 32? 140? 12, the different numbers, because they went to Book Expo, there was over 100, actually, rejections. But Mark, you know Mark, you've met Mark Victor Hansen? He knew it was a New York Times bestseller. Those 100 publishers didn't know. Well, what about Bill Gates? Everyone knows at 17, what school was he going to? Harvard. His heart's telling him, you need to start a computer software company. Every home's going to have a computer. If you don't do it, somebody else will. So he talks to his guidance counselor. I'm going to quit Harvard and start a business. And what's the guidance counselor say? You crazy? You stupid? You're at Harvard. You stay here and get a 4-year degree and go work for a large company like Enron. They'll take care of you. Isn't that what happened? And so it's important. You know the people around that tend to spit on your dreams and pull you down. You have to watch it. It's so funny that they'll make fun of you on the way up and they'll resent you once you have it. How motivating is that? Is that true, though? I've seen it happen. And it's interesting. It was a real eye-opener for me. I grew up in Orange County, Southern California. And I came back to visit my parents. They still live down there for the holidays over Christmas. And it was a couple days after Christmas. We went to the John Wayne Airport. And I had a daughter that was about 4 years old. And the holiday cheer had left the building. Lights were oversold, people were getting bumped, people were being nice to each other. It's kind of like the after Thanksgiving sales where people just aren't nice to each other. They're fighting. We'll talk about that later. So we get there, and I'm like, oh, we're not even going to make this flight. It's crowded. And then the loudspeaker comes on, Mr. Mortensen, will you please come to the podium? Oh, man, I'm going to get bumped. Because Mr. Mortensen, would you mind if we upgraded your whole family to first class? Duh. Well, that's pretty so. Well, sure. He says, well, we're boarding now. Take your things. And so it was the three of us. So my wife's sitting by the window. My daughter, very small, 4-year-old, in this big first-class chair, was sitting in the aisle, and I sat across the aisle. And there was no room in the overhead bins, and so I went behind the little curtain and put my carry-on and coats and didn't think much of it. And I was sitting there watching the people come in, and there was my daughter, small daughter, big seat, very comfortable. The flight attendants were giving her cookies and soda and just really doting on her, and she was just loving it. She was talking to everyone. And then as people were coming around that corner on that plane to board, they were looking at my daughter. Were they happy for her? Were they mad at her? They were resentful. They were mad. I'm thinking, whoa, wait a minute. Can't anybody pay for a first class seat? But people would rather resent the person sitting there, then pay the price to get it. And that's a big lesson. You have to watch the people around you. And then we came into a landing. I went to get my thing. He said, excuse me, sir, let me get my bag. And he looked at me. He was mad. He says, you know what? You're not first class. You're no class. Whoa! What do you say to that? And then it was just a big lesson. I'm like, wow. I don't know what was going on in his life, and I wasn't going to make him any madder. But that's just something to understand when you talk about mindset and working with people. And you can go to a family gathering, sit next to Aunt Edna, and you can feel her sucking the energy out of you. You know who we're talking about? You just have to be careful. You can't let it bother you. You follow your heart. That's lesson number one with mindset. You follow your heart. And number two, no matter who you are, the universe is going to test you. To see if your desire to become wealthy is just a mere wish or a burning desire. Because when you have a burning desire that Napoleon Hill talks about and your family says, oh, how's your real estate millions coming? Does that motivate you? It does, doesn't it? And that's when you know it's a burning desire is when it motivates you. Because it's going to test you along the way. Because millionaires always have a story. There's that one defining moment. Isn't that true? Things will happen in your life. We don't wish these things upon you, but everything, every challenge or obstacle you face in your life is there because there's something you need to learn to take your life and your income to the next level. I don't wish them upon you because some of them are pretty tough. Have you ever felt kicked in the head and left for dead by the universe before? It's almost like a baby giraffe being born. Have you ever seen this happen? When a baby giraffe is born, it falls about 5 feet from its mother's womb, slam, onto the earth, welcome to life. And then the loving mother giraffe comes up to it and starts kicking it. Starts kicking it and kicking it. And the baby giraffe kind of gets up and it wobbles a little bit, tries to stand up, and the loving mother giraffe comes up and kicks its feet out from underneath it. It falls down to the earth again, and the loving mother giraffe does what again? Starts kicking it again, and it keeps doing it. Now, if we're just watching it from the outside, we're thinking, oh, call the giraffe abuse shelter or whatever it is. That's not nice. That's not fair. But let's back up. If that mother giraffe does not do that, what's going to happen to that baby giraffe? It'll be done. Will not survive. Now, it looks mean. And life does that to us sometimes. We face these obstacles, these challenges. It was about 4 years ago when Robert Allen was involved in that car accident. You know about that? He still can't golf. Still has a lot of pain. Did you see the pictures of the car? Incredibly survived. He's going 70 and hit a tree off the freeway. And the tree didn't move. And I was there when the phone call came in, and we didn't think he was going to live. And it was a serious accident. Now, he still has pain from that. He still can't golf. Why would he say that's one of the greatest things that ever happened to him? What's that? Changed his mind. What did you think? His mindset. He feels a little more spiritual, more focused. He's doing a little bit different. I mean, that's all part of that. We don't wish these things, but some of these experiences we have to go through, or you have to learn from. Because if you don't learn from an obstacle or challenge in your life, what's going to happen? You have to repeat it. So you might as well learn the first time. Because every challenge you face is either going to make you a better person or a bitter person, isn't it? It's going to give you constant pain in your life, or it's going to help you tap into your passion. So they're there, and that's important to understand. When I went, both my parents were educators. Dad was a high school teacher, and I thought the secret to success was a graduate degree. Now, the paper looks good on the wall, but I don't agree with that right now. But what happened is I moved from California to Pennsylvania, and I went to school, going through school. And the guidance counselor calls me up and realized I was the only person who hadn't interviewed with a company. What's wrong with you? You have an interview. I go, I think I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And what did he say? Well, that's stupid. That's kind of risky. You're spending all this money. You should work for a big company like WorldCom, because they'll take care of you. Yeah. And so I call my family and friends. They're like, who are you going to work for? Who are you interviewing with? I'm like, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And what do my family and friends say? Stupid. What are you thinking? You're destined for failure. All this fun feedback. And I was approached by a venture capitalist. And started a company, a very high-tech company in Pennsylvania. And I was going to show my family and friends. 1 year had passed. 2 years had passed. 3 years had passed. Things were starting to develop for them. And then after 3 years, circumstances beyond my control and a large knife in my back. There had been some embezzlement and a few other things I was not aware of. The company had gone belly up, and I found myself over $100,000 in debt. The universe had kicked me, and they had left me for dead, and here come my friends calling up on the phone. Lowest point of my life. Here they come, what did I say? Help yourself, stupid. You should listen to me. Now you'll get a corporate job. I'm thinking, I can't pay that off with a corporate job. I'm an entrepreneur. Have you guys figured out we're strange and unique people? Okay, we're a little bit different. We're not satisfied going to a dead-end job that we hate, that's sucking our life out of us, that's making our soul rust from the inside. We don't want that. And I did something I don't wish upon anybody. I moved across the country in with my in-laws. Okay? Don't wish that. It was to Seattle. And I had a father-in-law that was a PhD, that was, oh, I'll take care of you. I'm going to get you interviews at Boeing and at Microsoft. And I said, no, thank you. Which labeled me what? The good-for-nothing, lazy son-in-law. Right? Isn't that what happened? And so, long story short, I found my way. I paid that off a long time ago. But that experience taught me the desire, drive, motivation, determination, the things that I needed to learn to take my life and my income to the next level. Does that make sense? So when we face these things, what can we learn? Because once you learn and become financially independent, we want you to teach others how to do it and go through it. So mindset. The second one is fear. Now, how much does fear cost you? Millions. Billions. What are you so scared of? Success? Fear of success? Is that a real fear? Wow, what are you, afraid of a nice house? Slamming your fingers in the Mercedes door? Where's this fear coming from? But it is a legitimate fear. A lot of people have that. Because where's that fear of success? What is the big underlying? That once you get it, you have to keep it and maintain it. And that scares you because a lot of times your mindset's not there yet. And the envy, it might be envy of people. People might not be your friends anymore. You might find people that will pretend to be your friends. And then they're not there when the money's gone. All these different things. Now here's the reality check. You were only born with two fears. A newborn baby has two fears. What are they? Fear of falling and the fear of loud noises are the only fears you were born with. So open up our minds here. All these fun little fears that you have right now have been learned. And if the good news is if you learned them, you can unlearn them. Fear of public speaking, one of the biggest fears out there. Higher than the fear of death. Jerry Seinfeld makes fun of it all the time, that people would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. Does that make any sense? What are we so afraid of? We're so afraid of what other people are going to say. Robert Allen says that you wouldn't care what other people think of you and realize how little they do. Isn't that true? So fear, where's that coming from, these learned fears? We do a lot of training, we do seminars on presentation skills and adapting persuasive presentation. And people have a fear. Some of you standing up had fears, didn't you? That was learned. And ultimately it comes back to an experience. I was talking to one lady, she says, I just can't do it, I have too many fears. Because what happens, every time she thinks about public speaking, she goes back to when she was in third grade, walking across the stage to give a speech, and she tripped. And what did the audience do? Laugh. That's funny. We like it when people fall on their faces. It's funny to us. And of course, every time she thinks about speaking, what happens? She thinks about that, that fear, that anxiety comes back, it replays. And what we just have people do is, okay, now this time, let's do it again, let's replay it. You're sitting in the audience, and you're watching yourself, and you trip and fall, what does she do? She laughs too, that's funny. So there's some things we have to take a look at as far as fear, and the fear of criticism. This is Napoleon Hill, he says about criticism. The fear of criticism robs man of his initiative, destroys his power of imagination, limits his individuality, and takes away his self-reliance. Self-reliance. That's so important. People will criticize you. People will spit on your dreams. When it's really a burning desire, it's not going to matter. You have to take a look at what fears are holding you back. You're not going to foreclose your doors or a chance they could take your head off? A chance they could yell at you? Is that costing you money? Fear of criticism, you need to be really careful. People aren't watching you. You have to follow. That's why it says successful people, they follow their heart. They know where they're going. Follow their heart. And that's what's interesting about public speaking, is it's people don't have a lot of experience with it, and it's just one of those fears that they pick up. Okay, we good? You weren't supposed to write it down, but I just had to mention it. That's a good quote. Okay, we good? All right. This is like this. Do people really notice you? This man sitting at work, the gentleman says, I've been out naked all day, but you're the first to notice. If people just don't notice, change the part of your hair, change something, people just don't notice. They're not watching you as much as you think they are. So the next one we notice with great people is personal development. The next book coming out for me is called Persuasion IQ. I've been watching top persuaders. What are they doing? And they take 5, 10% of their income, and what do they do with it? They reinvest it. They go back and they learn and learn. They have libraries. Most high-income homes, they have libraries. Do wealthy people watch more or less TV than those that are not wealthy? Much less. The phrase that's cost you millions of dollars besides fear and Latin persuasion skills is the phrase, "Oh, it's on TV, that's one," and, "Oh, I'll figure it out on my own." It's cost you millions of dollars. And that's what you're trying to tell your teenagers, but you're doing the same thing, aren't you? "I'll figure it out on my own." Now, when Donald Trump, whether you like him or not, has a challenge, does he figure it out on his own? Does he go to the Yellow Pages and find the cheapest person possible? What does he do? He finds the best, pays whatever cost, because it's not the cost, it's the what? The value, the return on investment. We just think differently. But society's programmed us that way, and I've made that mistake too. I remember going to the stock market seminar a while back, and I had some money to invest. I was excited, and I had three friends there. And but of course, it was a preview seminar, and at the end of the seminar, what do they want me to do? To join this $10,000 advanced training. I'm like, "Well, that's my investment capital." So, no. But my two friends did it, and I didn't, because I was going to buy a book and figure it out on my own. Well, I lost over $30,000 trying to figure it out on my own, and I talked to my friends, and guess what? They had made 10 times that. It's just our mindset. It's important how you look at this. Because as we look at this, you look at your success and the time it takes. It's very important to understand. Personal development is a critical thing. Now, isn't it interesting that those that watch TV think they know everything? Isn't this true? And the more you learn and study and read books, the less you think you know. Isn't that true? You realize there's so much to learn out there. The phrase, "I'll figure it out on my own," it takes people forever. It's just the worst thing you can do with anything you need to learn. It'll take, the money lost is just incredible. Because when you look at personal development, a Harvard study shows that those who are learning and growing every day, they're more optimistic about life. They're more enthusiastic about where they're going, what they're going to accomplish. But those who aren't learning and growing every day become negative, pessimistic, and doubtful about themselves in the future. Question? Exactly. Good question. I'll show that right now. See, books and tapes are the next one. You'll be more successful than trying to figure it out on your own. Now, here's the thing. I'm not going to sugarcoat this, and this is a hard thing to say as an author. But the chances of you reading a book and applying something from it is 1%. Think of all the books you have. Isn't that true? Now, books are great. I read books all the time. But then the big picture is, can you learn how to play basketball by reading a book? Now, you can learn some great things. It's a great start. But until you get on the court, it's not going to help you out. I think that's the big difference. I love books. I take social psychology books on vacation with me. It's a great start. But as far as success, it's great, but it's not the quickest way. And that's a big thing, too. When I write a book on persuasion theory, people say, "Well, I don't want the theory. What do they want? How do I apply this? How do I use this?" Just like the rules of basketball. The next is seminars. 3 and 4 days together makes a big difference in your success. And the top of the list, of course, is having a coach and a mentor. Now, some things in your life, books will be great. Some things in your life, tapes will be great. It depends how fast you want to learn things. How many mentors does Oprah have? Just for every aspect of her life. And if it's something really important to you, if you're trying to become physically fit or lose weight, the guarantee you're going to do that is what? Have a mentor. Have somebody live with you. Watch you 24 hours a day, cook for you. Are you going to lose it? It just depends on how important it is to you and on your aspect of your life. So that's personal development. So that is the first part. That's self-persuasion. You can't persuade yourself, you can persuade other people. So let's get into persuasion. Now the question to ask yourself, I guess you should ask other people, are you a guest, are you a pest, are you a pushover? What do you think? A pest? Some of you are pests. Anybody are a pushover? Afraid to push a little too hard? Now, a guest is someone that you welcome into your home that you want to be persuaded by. A pest is someone that says, sees a no soliciting sign and knocks on the back door. Right? A pushover, they're afraid to hurt someone's feelings. They don't push hard enough and no one ever does business with them. No one ever takes them seriously. Which one are you? I guess we shouldn't ask you. Who should we ask? The prospects, the people that you're talking to. Which one are you? I want to talk about how to adapt these things. When we think of a proverbial salesperson, we had to talk greasy, all these words came out. In fact, how many of you love to go buy cars? No hand. Now, here's the next question. How many of you bought a car from the same person twice? Two people. Isn't that amazing? Most people buy a new car every 4 to 5 years. You would think they would want the lifetime business of that person, but instead they use the old style techniques. What are some of the greasy things they do when you go to a car dealership? What do you want your monthly payment to be? They show you the wrong car?
The walls?
Oh, yeah. You're sitting there and they're pretending to talk about it. Anybody ever lose your trade and they couldn't find it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they get your keys and you don't get them back until you've bought something or you start yelling. It is, and we're tired of this. We don't like this. We don't like doing this. But they're using the very old school techniques. Even a blind pig can find food. Isn't this true? So these things work every once in a while. Hard closing techniques work 5% of the time, but have a 50% buyer's remorse rate. Now, let's talk about a shift. Saturn. Anybody here drive a Saturn? You like it? Decent car? Okay. Good car. So Saturn's a new car. They're like, well, they won't be profitable for a while, but they became the quickest automobile company to become profitable. Why? It wasn't the quality of the car. What happened when you bought your car? There was no salesperson. You showed up. What happened? And everybody pays the same. Here's the price. How refreshing is that? Here's the price. This is what everybody pays. And that attracted a lot of people because they didn't want to go through that old style thing. It's very, very manipulative. So the good salesman cares about meeting the needs of a customer. I need you to go away. Okay, we don't want that to happen to you. Don't want that to happen to you. So I want to talk about the power of persuasion. Go on to page 5. This was a big goal of me as I organized the Persuasion Institute. There's a lot of different camps out there on persuasion. What I wanted was the complete toolbox. So these are kind of just the different camps. The first one is the Dale Carnegie camp, which is people skills. Now what I want to point out, that's just a small piece of the persuasion pie. It's a necessary piece, but it's a small piece. Because the only thing you have is people skills, you're making a lot of friends like we talked about earlier, and selling nothing. So it's a good start. But there's so many other things that are important. What about closing skills or sales skills? There's a time and place for those, but that's your only piece that we need to learn that, but you need to learn a lot more than that. What about power? That's what I was talking about. Is persuasion good or bad? Can it be used for good or bad? Yes. Is gravity good or bad? It depends if you're falling, or if you're falling from a tree, or if you're just walking, it's the same type of thing. I mean, persuasion can be used to get children on drugs, and it can be used to keep them off drugs. It's a very powerful thing. Power is the same way. Power scares us sometimes because has power been abused out there? But power is an incredible thing for you as a persuader. Because one of the forms of power could be knowledge or your expertise. Once they accept you as the expert, what happens? They come to you, they want to be persuaded by you, they want to talk to you. Power is an interesting thing. Could physical characteristic, how about a policeman's uniform, does that increase their power, does that increase their ability to persuade you? Absolutely. Does a doctor's white coat increase their ability to persuade you? Does that degree on the wall, the white coat, isn't that an amazing thing? I was talking to my friend that I met in Pennsylvania when I was living there, became a doctor, went through residency, started up with a couple other doctors. I said, how's it going? We did lunch. What's different? What are some of the different things that you expect? He says, it's the most amazing thing. I have my degree on the wall, my white coat on, I walk into a room with a complete stranger and I say, please take off your clothes, and they do. You've been taught your whole life not to strip in front of strangers, all of a sudden, white coat, whoop, you're naked. That's expertise, isn't it? Isn't that amazing, those kind of knee-jerk reactions that we have? And power is an interesting thing. Even that when you look at FAA, plane accidents. A lot of plane accidents could have been avoided, but the co-pilot didn't say anything. Or the doctor-nurse relationship. That's an interesting one. Because the doctor knows what he's talking about. They did a study with a drug called Astrogen. A doctor called up a nurse and says, you don't know me, I have a patient there. I want you to administer this drug this amount at this time, I'll sign the prescription when I get there. Any red flags there? Anybody ever been a nurse? Been a nurse? There's some red flags there. Nurse didn't know the doctor. It was a lethal dose of the drug. No prescription. What percent of those nurses went to do it? Over 90%. Because the doctor. Yeah, doctors said sometimes we don't even think about it. So it can be a good thing, it can be a bad thing, but we're going to talk about more about expertise. That I could prescribe a massive amount of painkillers, but I'm the computer repairman. You know, the white coat. The white coat. Trust. Do people trust you? Here's a big shift. 20 years ago was, I trust you, give me a reason not to. Now what is it? Yeah, I don't trust you, give me a reason to trust you. That's a big shift. Are we more skeptical than ever before? Wow. People all automatically assume you're going to try to take advantage of them, don't they? We have to get past that. It's reality. It doesn't matter if it's fair. Do a lot of training with chiropractors. Do they get beat up out there? Is it fair? It doesn't matter. It's reality. We're going to talk about different levels of trust. Do you know how trusted real estate investors are? Do you want to know? I'll let you know here in a little bit. Personalities. Understanding personality types. That's a small piece of the persuasion pie. Now here's the challenge, is that you tend to persuade people how you like to be persuaded. Isn't that true? But we are different people. Have we figured that one out? So you need to persuade them how? How they need to be persuaded, how to read the people. That's why we did that exercise. You're learning to read people, follow your instinct, follow your intuition. And then there's incentives. You reward people for doing things. Well, what's the challenges with rewarding people? Does it work? It does work. What about if somebody says, your boss says, do it or you're fired? Does that work? Is that persuasion? Coercion? But does it work? Well, wait a minute, does that work? Do it or you're fired. Does that work? For the short term, but long term, what happens? Less performance. You do something else, and they've caught people doing some terrible things. Who are these people? They put cameras in the break room, and you know what they've caught people doing to their boss's coffee? I don't even know if I can tell you. Yeah. What would cause a person to do that? You push somebody hard enough, eventually they're going to do something. And that's true with incentives. Incentives can be a good thing, but what happens with the challenge with using incentives? Once you reward somebody for doing something, what's going to happen? They expect it, and it has diminishing returns, that every time they're going to want more and more and more. University I've worked at, during the holidays, every Christmas they give us a turkey. They've done it for years, as long as anybody can remember. Then one year they decided to eat no turkeys this year, let's give them a book. Now, that's the last thing you need as a professor, because everyone's giving you books, another book. Now, it's a gift, it's a nice gesture, everyone should be happy, but what happened? Yeah, people were mad, weren't they? And this is what's destroying the school system. Kids aren't reading. What can we do? If they read, we'll give them pizza. So they read more, or an iPod, or whatever it is, but then, once they've been rewarded, they no longer read without an award. We have to be very careful. But there's a time and place that you can use this, and we'll be talking about that. About fear. Is it okay to use fear to persuade? What do you think? Some, yes, no. Is it okay for a dentist to say only floss the teeth you want to keep? Is that fear? It's foreclosure. Some people you talk to will need a little fear, won't they? So there's a time and place. If it's your only thing that you're using, no, that's not right. But fear can be used in the right way. And then, of course, NLP, which stands for what? Neuro-linguistic programming. There's some great things in there. Some practitioners have kind of gone off on the wild side a little bit with some of the things, but I want to talk about some things that I can prove that are working that will help you out. NLP is a great also form of kind of how the mind works, how to program the mind when you're talking to other people. All right. Job evaluation day. Should we use fear? Slow, lazy, bad attitude. Does it work? Does for the short term. Does for the short term. So your prospects changed. Let's talk about it on page, the top six. What are the big changes? How do you think they've changed in the last 20 years? Okay, yeah. First of all, you got on the right page? Okay. We are bombarded, according to Advertising Age magazine, we are bombarded with over 5,000 persuasive messages a day. They're everywhere, aren't they? You walk the casino floor down there, you get hit with how many messages? Everywhere. Is it a football game? They put up the net for the field goal. Guess what was on the net? Advertising. It's everywhere. So that makes us become numb, doesn't it? The old style persuasion was throw a rope around somebody and pull them in. Now what I want to talk about is becoming magnetic and drawing people to you. Also, we're more skeptical than ever before. Why is that? What do you think that is? We've been deceived. We've been taken advantage of. That's on the increase. What's that? They claim, and we've been burned, and we don't believe them. Sure. Oh, yeah. Dateline, or someone does information on air conditioning repair. And they probably do 50 people, and one or two are dishonest. And who make the show? The dishonest one. I've trained air conditioning repair, and they're very men. Most of them are good people. We see this on TV, we automatically see them, they're all out. They get us. Very, very skeptical. Well, what's that? Yeah, no story. I mean, they've been accused. It's not news. Yeah, we don't want to watch the news anymore because it sucks the energy out of you. Educated. We are more educated than ever before. Now, what do I mean by that? 20 years ago when you went to go buy a car, who did you have to believe? Salesperson. Now, before you go buy a car, what happened? You search the internet. What can you find on the internet? Competitors, manufacturer's price, recall, consumer blue book, consumer reports. Does that give you power as a consumer? Yeah, it does. It gives you a lot of power. But it changes things as far as the persuasion side is concerned. Now, a few definitions for you, just real simple. I want to keep it brief so you understand what we're going through this weekend. Persuasion, just write what you do when you say. These are techniques. Persuasion is what you do when you say. These are the techniques you learn, the verbal packaging, the words you use. So, persuasion is what you do when you say. And influence, just write down, is who you are. What I want to point out is that influence is a higher form of persuasion. So persuasion is what you do when you say. Influence is who you are. So influence is a higher form of persuasion because you don't need any facts or figures or details. They believe in you, and whatever you ask them to do, they're going to do. So we're going to talk about that too. Now, there's negotiation. We're going to talk a lot about negotiation the next 3 days. Now, why do I say negotiation is a lower form of persuasion? Why is negotiation a lower form of persuasion? Okay, compromise, anybody else? Short term? With the negotiation, write down, you meet in the middle. Okay, you meet in the middle. See, the reason I'm going to teach you, we're going to persuade first, negotiate second. Because persuasion, you bring them to your point of view, right? Negotiation, it's what? Give, take, and you meet somewhere in the middle. See, the challenge is most people in negotiation, they're not negotiating, they're bargaining. Aren't they? It's all about the price. People don't listen. It's all about the price, price, price. And that's the last thing that we want to get past. And then there's power, which amplifies your ability to persuade. Power amplifies your ability to persuade. And the last one, your motivation, that's your call to action. So when I talk about these words, persuasion is what you do when you say, influence is who you are, negotiation, you're meeting in the middle. Power could be your knowledge, your expertise, your history, your credibility. Amplifies, and motivation is your call to action. Short-term compliance versus long-term influence. Let's just get this foundation. Now, let's talk about the different, in the higher, there's control. Like that there in the bottom of 7. Control is when you use force, fear, or threats. Force and fear. Now, Al Capone has said you can get pretty far with a nice word, but get much further with a nice word and a gun. Isn't that true? You persuade pretty well with a gun, but then there's long-term consequences. This is the lowest form of what they call persuasion. Force, fear, and threat. If you were, say, vice president of a large company, and everyone's talking about you're going to get the next promotion, you're going to be the next CEO, the CEO calls you and says, look, I have one last project for you. You accomplish this, you're going to be the next CEO. The charity, the board of directors, wants us to donate $100,000 to this charity from the employees. Could you raise that money, make it happen, the promotion's yours? Wow. So you do the math, and that's about, $100,000 or $1,000 per employee. how are you going to ask employees for $1,000? Well, you could meet them out in the parking lot with a gun. Would you get it? If they believed you, they would. But what are the long-term consequences? Jail. When you become CEO, are they going to follow you? I mean, there's a lot of challenges there. The next one is coercion.